One eye was almost spent, and Goblin was doing his determined best, quietly, to pass on as many skills as he could to Tobo, before the inevitable began to overhaul him as well. I walked past the slow-moving file, intent on getting back up near the point so I could be among the first to see anything new. I did not see or feel any particular mission in anyone I passed. It seemed that a quiet despair informed everyone. These were not good signs. This meant the euphoria of our minor successes had collapsed. Most of these people realized that they had become refugees. Swan told me, "We have an expression up north. Going from the frying pan into the fire? Seems like about what we've done here." "Really? We got away from Soulcatcher. But now what?"
"Now we march on until we find our buried brothers. Then we break them out."
"You're not really as simple as you pretend, are you?"
"No, I'm not. But I do like to let people know that things aren't always as difficult as they want to make them." I glanced around to see who might overhear. "I have the same doubts everyone else has, Swan. My feet are on this path as much because I don't know what else to do as they are out of high ideals. Sometimes I look at my life and it seems pretty pathetic. I've spent more than a decade conspiring and committing crimes so I can go dig up some old bones in order to find somebody who can tell me what to do."
"Surrender to the will of the night."
"What?"
"Sounds like something Narayan Singh would say, doesn't it? In my great-grandfather's time, it was the slogan of the lady's supporters. They believed that peace, prosperity, and security would result inevitably if all power could be concentrated in the hands of the right strong-willed person. And it did turn out that way, more or less, in principalities that did surrender to the will of the night, particularly near the core of the empire. There were generations of peace and prosperity. Plague, pestilence, and famine were uncommon. Warfare was a curiosity going on far, far away. Criminals were hunted down with a ferocity that overawed all but the completely crazy ones. But there was always bad trouble along the frontiers. The lady's minions, the ten who were taken, all wanted to build some empires of their own, which never lacked for external enemies. And they all had their own ancient feuds with one another. Hell, even peace and prosperity create enemies. If you're doing all right, there's always somebody who wants to take it away from you."
"I never pictured you as a philosopher, Swan."
"Oh, I'm a wonder after you get to know me."
"I'm sure you are. What are you trying to tell me?"
"I don't know. Killing time, jacking my jaw, making the trip go faster, or maybe just reminding you that you shouldn't get too depressed about the vagaries of human nature. I've been getting my roots ripped out and my life overturned and a boot in my butt propelling me into an unknown future, blindfolded, for so long now that I am getting philosophical about it. I enjoy the moment. In a different context, I do surrender to the will of the night."
Despite my religious upbringing, I have never cherished a fatalistic approach to life. Surrender to the will of the night? Put my life in the hands of God? God is great, God is good, God is merciful. There is no God but God. This we are taught. But the Bodhi philosophers may be right when they tell us that homage to the gods is best served when seconded by human endeavor.
"Going to get dark after a while,"
Swan reminded me.
"That's one of those things I've been trying to avoid thinking about," I confessed.
"But Narayan Singh was right. Darkness always comes. And when it did, we would find out just how wonderful a talisman our key was.
Have you noticed how the pillars keep on glittering, even though the sky has started to look like it's going to rain?"
"I have." Murgan never mentioned this one phenomenon. I wondered if we had not done something never done before. "Did this happen last time you were up here?"
"No. There was a lot of glitter when we had direct sunlight, but none that seemed like it was self-generated."
And was it this cold?" It had been getting chillier all day.
I recall a sort of Highland chill. Nothing intolerable.
Whoa! Sounds like party time.
A whoop and holler had broken out at the head of the column. I could not determine a cause visually, being of the short persuasion.
What is it?
The kid stopped. Looks like he's found something.
Chapter 72. What Tobo had found were the remains of the Nar, Sindawe, who had been one of our best officers in the old days and, possibly, the villain Mogaba's brother. Certainly those two had been as close as brothers until the siege of Jaikor, when Mogaba chose to usurp command of the company.
"Clear away from him, people," I growled. "Give the experts room to take a look."
The experts being Goblin, who dropped to his knees and scooted around the corpse slowly, moving his head up and down, murmuring some sort of cantrips, touching absolutely nothing until he was certain there was no danger. I dropped to one knee myself.
"He got a lot farther than I would have expected," Goblin said.
"He was tougher than Rawhide. Was it Shadows?"
The body had that look.
"Yes,"
Goblin pushed gently. The corpse rolled slightly.
"Nothing left here. He's a dried-out mummy."
A voice from behind me said,
"Search him, you retard. He might have been carrying a message."
I glanced back. One Eye stood behind me, leaning on an ugly black cane. The effort had him shivering. Or maybe that was just the cold air. He had been riding one of the donkeys, tied into place so he would not fall if he dozed off, which he did a lot these days. I suggested, "Move him over to the side of the road. We need to keep this crowd moving. We have about 8 more miles to go before we stop for the night." I pulled that 8 out of the air, but it was a fact that we needed to keep moving. We were better prepared for this evolution than our predecessors had been. But our resources remained limited.
"Swan, when a mule with a tent comes along, cut it out of line."
"We need to make a travoy to bring the body." Every face within earshot went blank.
"We're still the Black Company. We still don't leave our own behind."
Which was never strictly true, but you do have to serve an ideal the best you can, lest it become debased. A law as ancient as coinage itself says bad money will drive out good. The same is true of principles, ethics, and rules of conduct. If you always do the easier thing, then you cannot possibly remain steadfast when it becomes necessary to take a difficult stand. You must do what you know to be right, and you do know. 99 times out of 100, you do know, and you're just making excuses because the right thing is so hard, or just inconvenient.
"Here's his badge,"
Goblin said, producing a beautifully crafted silver skull in which the one ruby eye seemed to glow with an inner life. Sindawe had made that himself. It was an exquisite piece from talented hands.
"You want to take it?"
That was the custom, gradually developed since the adoption of the badges under Soulcatcher's Susantry, back when the captain was just a young tag-along with a quill pen. The badges of the fallen were passed down to interested newcomers, who were expected to learn their lineage and thus keep the names alive. It is immortality of a sort. I jumped. Sara made a startled noise. I recalled that something similar had happened to Mergen last time, although in that case, only he had sensed it. I thought, maybe I ought to consult him. An entire squad of soldiers had been assigned to tend and transport the mist projector as delicately as was humanly possible. Even Tobo was under orders to match his pace to that manageable by the crew moving our most valuable resource. Tobo had not done a good job of conforming. Carts creaked past. Pack animals shied away from Zindawe's remains, but never so far they risked straying from the safety of the road. I had begun to suspect that they could sense the danger better than I could, because I had to rely entirely upon intellect for my own salvation. Only the black stallion seemed unmoved by Zindawe's fate. The white crow seemed very much interested in the corpse. I had the feeling Zindawe was someone it knew and mourned. Ridiculous, of course. Unless that was Mergen inside there, as someone had suggested, trapped outside his own time. Master Santaraxita came along, leading a donkey. Baladitya, the copyist, bestrode the beast. He studied a book as he rode, completely out of touch with his surroundings. Perhaps that was because he could not see them, or he did not believe in the world outside his books. He had the lead rope of another donkey tied to his wrist. That poor beast staggered under a load consisting mostly of books and the tools of the librarian's trade. Among the books were some of the annals, on loan, including those that I had salvaged from the library. Centaraxita pulled out of line.
"This is so absolutely exciting, Durabi, having adventures at my age, being pursued through ancient eldritch, living artifacts by terrible sorcerers and unearthly powers. It's like stepping into the pages of the old Vedas."
"I'm glad you're enjoying it so much. This man used to be one of our brothers. His adventure caught up with him about 14 years ago."
"And he's still in one piece?"
"Nothing lives on the plain unless it has the plain's countenance, even including the flies and carrion eaters you'd expect to find around a corpse anywhere."
"But there are crows here."
He indicated birds circling at a distance. I had not noticed them, because they were making no sounds, and there were only a few of them in the air, as many as a dozen more, perched atop the stone columns. The nearest of those were now just a few hundred yards ahead. "They're not here to feast," I said. "They're the protector's eyes. They run to her and repeat whatever we do. If they touch down after dark, they'll end up just as dead as Zindawe did." "Hey, Swan. Right now, up and down the column, pass the word. Nobody does anything to bother those crows. It might break holes in the protection the road gives against the shadows."
"You're determined to put me on Ketcher's shit list, aren't you?"
"What?"
"She doesn't know I'm not dead, does she? Those crows are going to put the finger on me."
I laughed. "Soul Ketcher's displeasure shouldn't worry you right now. She can't get to you.
You never know."
He went off to tell everybody I wanted those watch crows treated like favored pets.
"A strange and intriguing man," Santaraxita observed.
"Strange, anyway, but he's a foreigner."
"We are all foreigners here, Durabi."
That was true. Very true. I could close my eyes and still be overwhelmed by the strangeness of the plain. In fact, I felt that more strongly when I was not looking at it. When my eyes were closed, it seemed as aware of me as I was aware of it. Once we got Zindawe loaded, I continued walking beside Master Santaraxita. The librarian was every bit as excited as he claimed. Everything was a wonder to him, except the weather.
"Is it always this cold here, Durabi?"
"It's not even winter yet." He knew about snow only by repute. Ice, he knew, is something that fell from the sky during the ferocious storms of the rainy season. "It could get a lot colder. I don't know. Swan says he don't recall it being this chilly the last time he was up here. But that was at a different time of the year, and the circumstances of the incursion were different. I was willing to bet that seldom in its history had the plain ever experienced the crying of a colicky baby or the barking of a dog. One of the children had sneaked the dog along, and now it was too late to change anyone's mind.
"How long will we be up here?"
"Ah. The question nobody's had the nerve to ask. You're more familiar with the early annals than I am anymore. You've had months and months to study them, while I haven't had time to keep my own up to date. What did they tell you about the plane?
Nothing.
Not who built it? Not why? By implication, Kina is involved somehow. So are the free companies of Katavar, and the golem demon Shvetya. At least we think the thing in the fortress up ahead is the demon who's supposed to stand guard over Kina's resting place. Not very effectively, apparently, because the ancient king Rajernak drove the deceivers of his time into the same caverns where Soulcatcher trapped the captured. And we know that the books of the dead are down there somewhere. We know that Uncle Doge says, without offering any convincing evidence, the Nuang Bo are the descendants of another free company. But we also know that Uncle and Mother Goda sometimes mention things that aren't part of the usual lore.
Durabi?
Centaraxita, I found, wore that expression he always put on when I surprised him. I grinned, told him, I rehearse all this every day, 20 times a day. I just don't usually do it out loud. I believe I was hoping you would add something to the mix. Is there anything? By direct experience, we know that it takes 3 days to get to the fortress. I assume that stronghold is located at the heart of the plain. We know there's a network of protected roads and circles where those roads intersect. Where roads exist, there must be some place to go. To me, that says there must be at least one more shadow gate somewhere. I looked up. You think?
You bet our survival on the possibility that there's another way off the plane?
Yep. We didn't have anywhere left to run back there. There was that look again. Suvrin, plodding along and listening in silence, had that look too. I said, Although I've been surrounded by Goonie all my life, I'm still unfamiliar with the more obscure legendary. And I know even less about that of the older, less well-known, non-proselytizing cults. What do you know about the Land of Unknown Shadows? It seems to be tied in with aphorisms like all evil dies there in endless death, and calling the heaven and the earth and the day and the night.
The last one is easy, Dorabi. That's an invocation of the Supreme Being. You might also hear it as the formula calling the earth and the wind and the sea and the sky, or even calling yesterday and today and tonight and tomorrow. You spout those off thoughtlessly, because they're easy, and you have to deliver a certain number of prayers every day. I'm sure Vedna, who actually keep up with their prayers, take the same shortcuts.
Twinges of guilt. My duties of faith had suffered abominably the past 6 months. Are you sure?
No. But it sure sounded good, didn't it? Easy. You asked about Guni. I could be wrong in a different religious context.
Of course. How about Bone Warrior, Stone Soldier, or Soldier of Darkness?
Excuse me? Durabi?
Never mind. Unless something related occurs to you, I'd better trot up the line and get Tobo slowed down again. As I passed the Black Stallion and White Crow, the latter chuckled and whispered that,
Sister! Sister!
Phrase again. The bird had heard the entire conversation. Chances were that it was not Mergen, nor was it Soulcatcher's creature. But still, it was extremely interested in the doings of the Black Company, to the point of trying to give warnings. It seemed quite pleased that we were headed south and were unable to turn back. Behind me, Master Santaraxita's group paused. He and Baladitya studied the face of the first stone column, where golden characters still sparked occasionally. It is immortality of a sort. Chapter 73. The people of the former Shadowlands clung to the best cover available, while they watched Nemesis cross their country in a slow and angry progression toward the pass through the Donda Presh. In more than one place, Soulcatcher's appearance gave rise to the rumor that Kadi had been reborn and was walking through the world again. She always did love a good practical joke. What the witnesses saw seemed to be the goddess in her most terrible aspect. She was naked, except for a girdle of dried penises and a necklace of babies' skulls. Her skin was a polished mahogany black. She was hairless everywhere. She had vampire fangs and an extra pair of arms. She seemed about 10 feet tall. What she did not seem was happy. People stayed out of her way. She was not alone. In her wake came an equally naked woman, as white as Soulcatcher was dark. She was 5.5 feet tall. Even covered with cuts and bruises and dirt, she was attractive. Her face was empty of all expression, but her eyes burned with patient hatred. She wore only one item of ornamentation, a shoulder harness to which a cable 10 feet long had been attached. That cable connected her to the rusty iron cage floating in the air behind her. The cage enclosed a skinny old man who had suffered several severe injuries, including a broken leg and some bad burns. The girl was compelled to tow the cage. She never spoke, even when the monster encouraged her with a switch. Possibly she had lost the faculty. Narayan Singh had been the unfortunate who triggered Goblin's booby trap, not its beloved intended. The deceiver shared the cage with the large bound book. He was too weak to keep it closed. Wind toyed with its pages. Once in a while the breeze showed its vicious side and yanked a page away from the book's tired binding. Sometimes delirious, Narayan thought he was in the hands of his goddess, either being punished for some forgotten transgression or transported to paradise. And perhaps he was right. It did not occur to Soulcatcher to wonder what use she had for him alive. Not that she was taking any special trouble to keep him that way. Nor did the Daughter of Night seem particularly concerned about his fate.
Chapter 74. I managed to overtake Tobo before he sped through the crossroads circle. "We're stopping here," I told him, hanging on to his shoulder. He looked at me like he was trying to remember who I was. "Back up to the circle."
"All right. You don't have to be so pushy."
"Good. The real you is back." "Yes, I do. No one else seems to be able to restrain you." As we stepped into the circle, I told him, "There should be a..." "Yes, right here." There was a hole in the roadway surface, 4 inches deep, and as big around as my wrist. "Put the handle of the pickaxe in that."
"Why?"
"If the shadows can get inside the protected areas, that's the direction they'll come from. Come on, do it. We've got a ton of work to do if we're going to set up a safe camp." There were too many of us to get everyone inside the circle. That meant some would have to overnight on the road. Not a practice encouraged by Mergen. I wanted only the calmest personalities back there. Mergen guaranteed that every night on the plane would be some kind of adventure. Suvrin found me trying to get Iqbal and his family moved toward the heart of the circle. The animals were hobbled there, and I had a feeling that the plane really did not like being trampled upon by things with such hard feet. "What is it, Suvrin?"
"Master Santaroxita would like to see you at your earliest convenience."
He grinned like he was having a wonderful time. "Suvrin, have you been getting into the ganja or something?"
"I'm just happy. I missed the Protector's state visit. Therefore, I'm all right until some time that's still far off yet. I'm on the greatest adventure of my life, going places no one of my generation would have thought possible, even a few weeks ago. It won't last. It just plain won't last, the way my luck runs. But I'm for damned sure having fun now. Except my feet hurt."
"Welcome to the Black Company. Get used to it. Bunyan should be our seal, not a fire-breathing skull. Did anyone learn anything useful today?"
"My guess would be that Master Santarachita might have come up with something. Else why would he bother to send me to find you?
You got bold and sarky fast once you got up here.
I've always thought I'm more likable when I'm not afraid.
I glanced around. I wondered if stupid ought not to be in there somewhere, too. Show me where the old boy is. Suvrin had the chatters. Bad for him.
He's a wonder, isn't he?
Santarachita? I don't know about that. He's something. Keep an eye out that you don't accidentally find his hand fishing around in your pants. Suvrin had made camp for himself, and the older men right at the edge of the circle, on its eastern side. Santarachita had to have picked the spot. It was directly opposite the nearest standing stone. The librarian was seated Goonie-style, cross-legged, as near the edge as he dared get, staring at the pillar.
"Is that you, Dorabi? Come, sit with me."
I overcame a burst of impatience, settled. I was out of shape for that. The company continued its northern habits, using chairs and stools and whatnot, even though we now had only two old crew souls left. Such is inertia. "What are we looking for, Master?" It was obvious he was watching the standing stone.
"Let's see if you're as bright as I believe you are."
There was a challenge I could not ignore. I stared at the column and waited for truth to declare itself. A group of the characters on the pillar brightened momentarily. That had nothing to do with the light of the setting sun, which had begun creeping in under the edge of the clouds. That was painting everything bloody. After a while, I told Santarachita, "It seems to be illuminating groups of characters according to some pattern."
"Mainly in reading order, I think."
"Down? And to the left?"
"Reading downward in columns isn't uncommon in the temple literature of antiquity. Some inks dried quite slowly. If you wrote in horizontal lines, you sometimes smeared your earlier work. Writing downward in columns, right to left, suggests to me left-handedness. Possibly those who placed the stelae were mostly left-handed."
It struck me that writing whatever way was convenient for you personally could lead to a lot of confusion. I said so.
"Absolutely, Dorabi. Deciphering classical writing is always a challenge, particularly if the ancient copyist had time on their hands and were inclined to play pranks. I've seen manuscripts put together so that they could be read both horizontally and vertically, and each way tells a different story. Definitely the work of someone who had no worries about his next meal. Today's formal rules have been around for only a few generations. They were agreed upon simply so we could read one another's work. And they still haven't penetrated the lay population to any depth."
Most of that I knew already, but he needed his moments of pedantry to feel complete. They cost me nothing. "And what do we have here?"
"I'm not sure. My eyes aren't sharp enough to pick up everything. But the characters on the stone closely resemble those in your oldest book, and I've been able to discern a few simple words."
He showed me what he had written down. It was not enough to make sense of anything.
"Mostly, I think we're looking at names, possibly arranged in a holy scripture sort of way. Maybe a roll call of the ancestors kind of thing."
"It is immortality of a sort."
"Perhaps. Certainly you can find similarly conceived monuments in almost every older city. Iron was a popular material for those who considered themselves truly rich and historically significant. Generally, though, they were erected to celebrate individuals, notably kings and conquerors, who wanted following generations to know all about them."
"And every one of those I've ever seen was a complete puzzle to the people living around it now. Thus a feeble immortality of a sort."
"And there's the point. We'll all achieve our immortality in the next world, however we may conceive that. but we all want to be remembered in this one. I suppose so that when the newly dead arrive in heaven, they'll already know who we are. And yes, even though I am a devout, practicing Guni, I am very cynical about what humanity brings to the religious experience.
I'm always intrigued by your thinking, Master Santaraxita. But in today's circumstances, I just don't have time to sit around musing on humanity's innumerable foibles, nor even those of God, or the gods if you prefer. Santaraxita chuckled.
Do you find it amusing to see our roles thus reversed?
A few months in the real world had done wonders for his attitude. He accepted his situation and tried to learn from it. I considered accusing him of being a Bodhi fellow traveler. I fear I'm much less of a thinker than you like to believe, Master. I've never had time for it. I'm probably really more of a parrot than anything.
And I suspect that surviving in your trade eventually leaves everyone more philosophical than you want to admit, Dorabi.
Or more brutal. None of these men were ever sterling subjects. Santaraxita shrugged.
You remain a wonder, whether or not you wish to be one.
He made a gesture to indicate the standing stone.
Well, there you have it. It may say something. Or it may just be remembering the otherwise unheralded, whose ashes nourished weeds. Or it may even be trying to communicate, since some of the characters seem to have changed.
His tone became one of intense interest as he completed his last sentence.
Dorabi, the inscription doesn't remain constant. I must have a closer look at one of those stelae.
Don't even think about it. You'd probably be dead before you got to it, and would get the rest of us dead, too. He pouted. This is the dangerous part of the adventure, I told him. This is the part that leaves us no room for innovation or deviation or expressing our personalities. You've seen Sindawe. No better or stronger man ever lived. That was nothing he deserved. Whenever you feel creative, you just go look on that travois. Then take another look.
Gah! It smells like the inside of a stable here already.
A little breeze wouldn't hurt, as long as it blew away from me. The animals were all crowded together and surrounded, so they could not do something stupid like wander out of the protective circle. And herbivores tend to generate vast quantities of byproduct.
All right, all right. I don't make a habit of doing what's stupid, Dorabi.
He grinned. Really? What about how you got here?
Maybe it's a hobby.
He could laugh at himself.
They're stupid and stupid. None of those boulders is going to make my pebble turn into a standing stone.
I'm not sure if that's a compliment or an insult. Just keep an eye on the rock and let me know if it says anything interesting. It occurred to me to wonder if these pillars were related to the pillars the company had found in the place called the Plain of Fear, long before my time. Those stones had even walked and talked, unless the captain exaggerated even worse than I thought.
Whoa! Look there! Right along the edge of the road!
That's a shadow being sneaky. It's already dark enough for them to start moving around. It was time I started moving around, making sure everyone remained calm. The shadows could not reach us if no one did anything stupid. But they might try to provoke a panic, the way hunters will try to scare up game. Chapter 75. Despite the numbers and the animals and my own pessimism, nothing went wrong. Goblin and I made repeated rounds of the circle and the tailback running north up the protected road. We found everyone in a mood to be cooperative. I suppose that had something to do with the shadows clinging to the surface of our invisible protection and oozing around like evil leeches. Nothing focuses the attention like the proximity of a bad death.
There are other ways in and out of this circle besides the one we came in, and the one we're going to use tomorrow, I told Goblin. How come we can't see them?
I don't know. Maybe it's magic. Maybe you ought to ask One Eye.
Why him?
You've been around long enough that you should have discovered the truth. He knows everything. Just ask. He'll tell you.
Evidently, he was less worried about his friend. He was back to picking on One Eye. You know, you're right. I haven't had much chance to talk to him, but I did notice that he's going all out to be a pain. Why don't we go wake him up, tell him he's in charge, and get ourselves some shut-eye? Which is what we did, with slight modifications. After we made sure there was a watch rotation for every potential entry into the circle, whether it could be seen or not. With help from Goda and Uncle Doge, One Eye was still capable of contributing a little something to his own protection. Not that he was willing to admit that. I believe Goblin went off and whispered something to Tobo, too, after we went our respective ways. I had just gotten comfortable on my nice rock bed when Sara invited herself over for a chat. I really was tired and uncharitable. When I sensed her presence, I just wanted her to go away. And she did not stay long. She said, "Mergen wanted to talk to you, but I told him you were exhausted and needed to rest. He wanted me to warn you that your dreams may be particularly vivid and probably confusing. He said, just don't go anywhere and don't panic. I have to go tell Goblin and One Eye and Uncle and some others and have them spread the word to everyone else. Rest easy." She patted my hand, letting me know we were still friends. I grunted and closed my eyes. Mergen was right. Night on the glittering plain was another adventure entirely. The landmarks were similar, but seemed to be ghosts of their daytime selves, and the sky was not to be trusted. The plain itself was still all shades of gray, but now with some sort of implied illumination that left all the angles and edges clearly defined. Once when I glanced upward, I saw a full moon and the sky crowded with stars. Then, only moments later, the overcast was back, and there was nothing to be seen at all. The characters inscribed on the standing stones all seemed busy, which was not something Mergen had noted during his own visit. I watched for a moment, recognizing individual characters, but no words. Nevertheless, I had an epiphany. I would have to pass on to Master Centaraxita in the morning. The inscriptions on the pillars did begin at the upper right and read downward. For the first column, the second column read from the bottom upward, then the third read back down, and so on. I became more interested in the things moving amongst the pillars, though. There were some big shadows out there, things with a presence potent enough to terrify and scatter the little shadows radiating hunger as they crawled over the surface of our protection. The big ones would not come closer. They had about them an air of infinite, wicked patience that left me convinced they would be out there waiting if it took 1,000 years for one of us to screw up and open a gap in our protection. In dream, all roads leading into the circle were equally well-defined. Each was a glimmering ruler stroke running off to glowing domes in the distance. Of all those roads and domes, though, only those on our north-south trace seemed to be fully alive. Either the road knew what we wanted to do, or it knew what it wanted us to do. In an instant, I was amazed, bewildered, terrified, exultant, having realized that in order to see what I was seeing, I would have to be at least 12 feet above my normal height of eye. Which meant that I had to go outside my skin, the way Mergen did. And while I had wished for the ability 1,000 times and the view was engrossing, the risks were none I cared to face when the opportunity was real. I sped a prayer heavenward. God needs to be reminded. I was totally, ecstatically happy being sleepy
without one shred of mystical talent. Really. If it was necessary that somebody in my gang do this sort of thing, Goblin or One Eye or Uncle Doge, or almost anyone else could have the magic, sparing only Tobo, despite him being the prophesied future of the company. Tobo was still a little too short on self-discipline to be handed any more capabilities. The presence of the small shadows was kind of like that of a flock of pigeons. They were not silent on the ghost world level, but they did not try to communicate unless with one another. It took me only moments to shut them out. The skies above were more troublesome. Each time I lifted my gaze, I saw that some dramatic change had occurred. Sometimes there was an impenetrable overcast, sometimes a wild star field and a full moon. Once there were fewer stars and an extra moon. Once a distinct constellation hung right over the road south. It conformed exactly to Mergen's description of a constellation called the Noose. Hitherto, I had always suspected the Noose to have been a fabrication on Mother Goda's part. Then, just beyond the golden pickaxe, I spied a strapping trio of the Uglies Mergen had reported meeting in that very spot his first night on the glittering plain. Were they Yakshas? Rakshasas? I tried to shoehorn them into Guni or even Kina's mythology, but just could not make them fit. There would be plenty of room, though, I did not doubt. The Guni are more flexible in matters of doctrine than are we Vedna. We are taught that intolerance is our gift of faith. Guni flexibility is just one more reason they will all suffer the eternal fires. The idolaters. God is great. God is merciful. In forgiveness, he is like the earth. But he can become a tad mean-spirited with unbelievers. I tried desperately to recall Mergen's report of his encounter with these dream creatures. Nothing came forward despite the fact that I had been the one who had written it all down. I could not for certain recall if his night visitors had been identical to these. These were humanoid and human size, but definitely lacking human features. Possibly they wore masks in the guise of beasts, judging from their frenetic gestures. They wanted me to follow them somewhere. I seem to recall something similar having happened during Mergen's episode. He had refused. So did I, although I did drift toward them and did attempt to engage them in conversation. I did not, of course, have a knack for generating sound without a body or tools. And they did not speak any language I knew, so the whole business was an exercise in futility. They became extremely frustrated. They seemed to think that I was playing games. They finally stamped away, obviously possessed by a big anger.
Mergen, I don't know where you are, but you're going to have to spend some time cluing me in here?
The ugly people were gone. No skin off my nose. Now maybe I could get some sleep, some real sleep, without all these too real dreams and awful, improbable skies. It started to rain, which told me which sky was the true sky, and paramount above the me that lay twitching fitfully as the cold drops began to make themselves felt. There was no way to get in out of it. There was no way to erect tents or other shelters on the plain. In fact, the matter of weather had not arisen during our planning sessions. I do not know why, though it seems that there is always something big that you overlook, something to which every planner on the team turns a blind eye. Then, when the breakdown or failure comes, you cannot figure out how you overlooked the obvious. Somehow, we must have concluded that there was no weather on the plain. Maybe because Mergen's annals did not recall any. But somebody should have noticed that the captured made this journey at a different time of year. Somebody should have realized that that was sure to have some impact. Somebody probably named me. It had been cool already when the rain began to fall. It grew chillier fast. Crabbily, I got up and helped cover stuff to protect it. Helped get out means for recovering some of the water. Then confiscated a piece of tenting and another blanket, rolled up and went back to sleep, ignoring the rain. It was only a persistent drizzle, and when you are exhausted, nothing but sleep matters much. Chapter 76. I found Mergen, waiting when I got home to Dreamland.
You seem surprised. I told you I'd see you on the plane.
You did, but I don't need it to be right now. Right now I need to sleep.
You are. You'll wake up as refreshed as if you hadn't dreamed at all.
I don't want to be drifting around loose from my body either.
Then don't.
I can control it?
You can. Just decide not to do it. It's pretty basic. Most people manage it instinctively. Ask around tomorrow. See how many of these people even recall being loose from their flesh.
It's something everybody does?
Up here. It's something everybody can do, if they want. Most don't want it so emphatically that they don't even recognize that the opportunity is there. Which doesn't matter. It's not why I'm here.
It matters a bunch to me. That stuff is scary. I'm just a simple low-class city brat.
Cancel the old wine and toe shuffle, Sleepy. You're wasting time. I probably know as much about you as you know about yourself. There are things you need to know.
I'm listening.
Till now, you've dealt with the plane well enough by letting the annals guide you. Stick with the rules you've already made, and you won't have any trouble. Don't dawdle. You didn't bring enough water. Even if you slaughter your animals as you go, the way you planned. There's ice here that you can melt, but if you waste time getting here, you'll end up having to kill more animals than you want. And take good care of them while they're still alive. Don't let them get so thirsty they start charging around, looking for water, and go busting through your protection. That'll heal itself, but it does take time. The shadows won't give you time.
Then we're safe from the break that killed Sindawe and some of the others?
Yes. You'll find Bucket tomorrow. I warn you now, so you'll have time to prepare yourself.
I was prepared already. I had been prepared for a long time. Actually, seeing Bucket dead would be difficult, but I would get past it. Tell me what I should do now that I'm here.
You're doing it. Just don't do it slowly.
Should I split the group? Send a strike force forward?
That wouldn't be wise. You wouldn't be able to manage whichever group you weren't with. And that'll be the one where somebody screws up and gets us all killed.
You too?
There's nobody else who can get me out if you fail. There isn't even anyone else out there who knows that we're alive.
The Daughter of Night and Narayan Singh, though. Probably. They had overheard enough to figure it out, certainly.
Which means Soulcatcher does, too, now. But you know, I don't really see those people developing an interest in raising the dead, not to mention that now the Shadow Gate can only be opened from this side. This is the last cast of the dice, Sleepy. And it's for everything.
I did not remind Mergen that Narayan Singh and his ward had a very strong interest in resurrecting someone who was practically his gravemate. He was right about the Shadow Gate, assuming there were no more keys outside. How did I know you were going to say something like that? He gave me the smile that probably won Sara's heart. I told him, "You should go see Sara."
I already have. That's why I was so late getting around to you.
What can I say? Oh, I saw those creatures. I did not know what they were called, so I tried to describe them.
The Washane, the Washene, and the Washone, collectively referred to as the Nef. They're dreamwalkers, too.
Two?
I'm a dreamwalker. You can see me, but only with your mind's eye, in some way that you remember me. The Nef are out here all the time. They may be trapped or they may no longer have bodies to go back to. I've never been able to tell. They want to communicate so badly, because they want something badly, but don't seem capable of learning how. They're from one of the other worlds. If they no longer have bodies, they may even be skinwalkers. So be very careful around them.
What are you blathering about?
Oh. We haven't talked about any of that yet, have we?
Any of what?
I really thought you'd figure most of it out by reading between the lines. The companies had to come from somewhere, and it would be hard to scratch out a living on a tabletop of bare stone. So they must have come from somewhere else, somewhere very else. Since the plane isn't so big, you can't walk around it and discover that there's nowhere for armies to come from. The land just gets colder and more inhospitable.
I'm real thick, boss. You should have drawn me some pictures.
I wasn't keen on having anyone outside, no. I didn't want anybody getting scared to come get me.
You're my brother. He ignored me.
I haven't slept here, so I have a lot of time on my hands. I've used some of it exploring. There are 16 shadow gates, Sleepy, and 15 of them open onto places that aren't our world. Or did at one time. Most of them are dead now, and in my state. I can't see what used to be on the other side without actually going out there. And I don't have the eggs to do that. Because I like my own world just fine, and I don't want to take a chance of getting trapped any farther away from it than I already am. Only 4 of the gates are still alive. And the one to our world is so badly hurt that it probably won't last many generations more.
I was lost. Completely. I was prepared for none of this. And yet he was right when he hinted that there were bells I should have heard ringing. What does all that have to do with Kina? It isn't in her legend anywhere. In fact, what does it even have to do with us? It's not in our legend anywhere.
Yes, it is, Sleepy. The truth is just so old that time has totally distorted it. Examine Guni mythology. There's a lot there about other planes, other realms of reality, different heavens and whatnot. Those stories go way back before the coming of the Free Companies 1,000 years or more. Near as I've been able to find out, when the first Free Company came off the plane almost 600 years ago, that event marked the first time our Shadow Gate had been used in at least 8 centuries. That's a lot of time for truth to mutate.
Whoa. Whoa. You're starting to imply things I can't quite get my mind around.
You'd better open it up and spread it out wide, Sleepy, because there's a whole lot more. And I doubt I've discovered even a tenth of it.
I have a dark, cynical, untrusting side that at times even doubts the motives of my closest friends. Why is it that none of this ever got mentioned until now? This isn't fresh news to you, is it?
No, it isn't. But I told you, I want out of here, badly. I chose not to pass on any information that might handicap you.
Handicap me? What the heck are you talking about?
Kina and the captured aren't the only things sleeping up here. There's also a lot of truths that would shake the foundations of our world. Truths I have no trouble imagining wholesale slaughters and holy wars arising to suppress. Truths I have no trouble seeing getting my family and the company obliterated. They're so threatening.
I'm trying to open my mind, but I'm having trouble. I feel like I'm about to plunge into an abyss.
Just hang on. I've been out here forever, and I still have trouble with it. I think the way to start is, I should outline the history of the plane.
Yes. Why don't you do that? That might be interesting.
You still have that edge on your tongue, don't you? Maybe Swan is right, and what you really need is a good... All right. All right. Listen closely. The plane was created so far back in antiquity that nobody on any of the worlds has any idea who built it, how or why. Though you have to believe that it was meant to be a pathway between the worlds.
Why the shadows and standing stones and...
I can't tell you anything if I'm not the one doing the talking.
Sorry.
In the beginning, there was the plane, just the plane, with its network of roads that have to be walked a certain way to get to other worlds. For example, every traveler has to enter the great circle at the center of the plane before he can leave the plane again. Back then, there were no shadows, no shadow gates, no standing stones, no great fortress inside the great circle, no caverns beneath the stone, no sleeping gods, no captured, no books of the dead. There was nothing but the plain, the crossroads of worlds, or possibly of time. One rogue school of thought insisted the gates all open into the same world, but at times, which are separated by tens of thousands of years. At some time still, in unimaginable antiquity, human nature asserted itself, and would-be conquerors began to charge back and forth across the plain. During a period of exhaustion, the wise men of a dozen worlds combined to make the first modifications to the plain. They built a fortress in the Great Circle and garrisoned it with a race of created immortal guardians whose task it would be to prevent armies from passing from world to world. Then we pass to the edge of proto-history, the age now recalled poorly as it is distorted in Goonie myth. Those driven to conquer will try to do so, whatever the obstacles. Kena, apparently, started out as your run-of-the-mill Dark Lord type that arises every few centuries, as Lady's first husband was. Only she was another in a line and association of many such, some of whom are now recalled as gods because of the impact they had on their times. The whole cabal decided to beef Kena up until she could overcome the demons on the plain. In the process, she did become what, for want of a better descriptive, we would have to call a god. And she behaved every bit as badly as her associates should have expected, with results more or less like those recalled in the mythology. Once Kena was asleep, her associates opened the maze of caverns under the plain and buried her way down deep somewhere. Then they created Shivetya, the steadfast guardian, to keep watch. Or they conscripted a surviving demon of the same name and strengthened him and bound him to do the job, if you prefer a less common version of the story. Then, apparently too exhausted to recover their greatness, they faded away. So Kena came out on top, even if she ended up imprisoned.
Why didn't they just kill her? That's something I've never understood about these squabbles amongst the gods. There's only one version of the Kena myth where her enemies do anything but just tuck her in. And in that one, even after she's all chopped up and scattered around, they leave the pieces alive and trying to get back together.
My guess would be she had some kind of dead man spell that entwined the fates of the other gods with her own. Those people wouldn't have trusted one another for a second. All of them would have had some protective mechanism, like Long Shadow used when he tied his fate into the well-being of the Shadow Gate.
But the Shadow Gate doesn't depend on his health anymore, not as long as he stays inside.
I was just posing an example, Sleepy. Let's stick to the history of the plane. What followed Kena's downfall isn't documented at all. But more conquerors came and went, and further efforts were made to dissuade them, while keeping the plain open for commerce. The gates and keys were created. One world gathered its sorcerers and had them steal the souls of millions of prisoners of war, creating the shadows and endowing them with a bitter hatred of everything living. They meant to close down the plain entirely, which naturally led some other race to create shields that protect the circles and roads. Nobody knows for sure how or when the standing stones began to appear. but they're the most recent addition to the plane. Probably put out by the precursors of the Multiple Worlds religious movement that produced the Free Companies. I understand that the stones aren't quarried. They're created things. They're immune to the shadows and indifferent to the protective shields, but they're attuned to the various keys carried away during the Free Company's age.
It's too much to grasp. It'll take a long time to digest. Kena is real, though?
Absolutely. Buried right down here under me somewhere. I've never been tempted to go look for her. I wouldn't want to accidentally cut her loose. I don't know how I could manage that, but I definitely don't want to find out the hard way.
What about Radranak and the Books of the Dead? Where do they fit? Radranak's war on the cult of Kena antedated the appearance of the Free Companies by several centuries, supposedly. Yet there were scary similarities suggesting shared origins.
The rise of the Free Companies is actually one of the least well-known, despite its being closest in time. There were many companies over several hundred years. They came from several different worlds and went off into several more, representing almost as many different sects of Kena worshippers. Most seem to have been sent out to explore, not conquer, or to serve as mercenaries, or even to bring on the Year of the Skulls. What their true mission seems to have been was to determine which world should be awarded the honor of being sacrificed in order to bring on the Year of the Skulls.
Then a bunch of worlds decided to gang up on ours?
Kena spanned many worlds. Her devil tree was almost universal, apparently.
And we lost the toss and got to bury her in ours.
You're not in our world anymore, Sleepy. This is the in-between. Where you are depends on what gate you walk out. And these days, you have only one choice. Its shadow gate lies straight ahead, on the far side of the plane. It's as if the plane itself is closing down the alternate ways.
I don't get it. Why would it do that, and how?
Sometimes it seems like the plane itself is alive, Sleepy. Or at least that it can think.
Is it where we came from? Is it where the captain spent most of his life trying to go?
No. The company can't go back to Katavar. Croker will never reach the Promised Land. The Shadow Gate is dead. The world where you're headed is very much like our own. To other worlds, it's known by a name that translates into Taglian somewhat vaguely as the Land of Unknown Shadows.
Without thinking, I responded, "All evil dies there in endless death."
What?
Startled.
Yes. How did you know? They were the people who committed the murders that produced the shadows.
I heard it somewhere. From a Nuang Bo.
Yes. Nuang Bo de Duang. In current Nuang Bo usage, that means something like the chosen children, colloquially, and nothing whatsoever that's sensible, literally. And the days when their forebears were sent out from the Land of Unknown Shadows, it meant roughly the children of the dead.
You've been busy, I observed.
Hardly, considering how long I've been trapped here. Try it for a decade, Sleepy. You won't have to put up with any of the distractions you complain about when you aren't getting everything you want to do done.
No kidding? Seems to me I'm all of a sudden having to work even while I'm sleeping.
Not for long. Whoever has control of that mist-making thing is trying to get me to answer him. Why don't you sneak around there and smash that sucker so I don't have to get dragged into it every time somebody wants my view on how to crack a walnut, or whatever else the crisis of the moment happens to be?
Not hardly, former boss. I'm carrying a whole bag of nuts myself.
You would.
Mergen departed as though yanked away. I could have sworn I heard the laughter of an eavesdropping white crow.
Chapter 77.
How come you're so crabby?
Willow Swan demanded when I snapped at him, for no good reason. Ragtime again already? I blushed. Me, after 20 years among the crudest men on 2 hooves. No, jerk. I didn't sleep very well last night.
What?
It exploded out of him like the shriek of a stomped rat. I didn't sleep well last night.
Oh, yeah. Not our sweet little sleepy. Guys, anybody, Row, River, whoever you want to step up and remind us about the roar and the rain last night?
Riverwalker told me. Boss, your snoring made more noise than a tiger in heat. We had people get up and move back up the road toward home to get away from the racket. There were people wanted to strangle you, or at least put your head in a sack. I bet if anybody else knew what the hell we were doing and where we were going, you'd be on that travoy with General Sendaway. But I'm such a sweet, delicate flower. I couldn't possibly snore. I had been accused of the crime before, but only jokingly, never with such passion. River snorted.
Swan decided not to marry you.
I'm stricken. I'll see if One Eye doesn't have a cure.
A cure? The man can't even take care of himself.
I scrounged up something to eat. It was barely worth the effort, and definitely not filling. We would be on short rations for a long time. Before I finished what morning preparations were possible for me, the forward elements were already moving. The general mood was more relaxed. We had survived the night, and yesterday, we had shoved it to the protector real good. The relaxation ended when we found Bucket's remains. Big Bucket, real name, Cato Dahlia, once a thief, once an officer of the Black Company, was almost a father to me. He never said, and I never asked, but I suspect he knew I was female all along. He was very unpleasant to some of my male relatives way back when. You did not want to be the object when Bucket got angry. I managed not to break down. I had had a long time to get used to the idea that he was gone. Though there was always some small irrational hope that Mergen was wrong, that death had overlooked him, and he was buried with the captured. The men put Bucket on the travoy with Sindawe, without having to be told. I tagged along and became entranced by one of those unaccountably irrelevant trains of thought that often take shape at such times. We had left a truly nasty mess where we had spent the night.